Hello and welcome to the NVR podcast number 15. I'm Rachel Elmer.
And I'm Peter Jacob.
And today we're talking about no support, ? Peter, how did we get to this topic today?
Well, I mean, to begin with, we were thinking about last podcast, which seems a bit distant in time. And I guess, you know, because we usually look at, well, what comes up in therapy, what comes up in supervision. And it's something that came up in supervision the other day, and it just comes up again and again and again. So it seems it's a real issue.
Mm.
Should I give a little bit of background?
Yeah, please do.
So my colleague was talking about work with a family. And she said that the mother in this family is a very private person.
Mm.
And then my colleague went on to talk about other issues in her work with the parent. And I thought, well, what does that mean? She's a very private person.
Mm.
So we went back to that, and I asked about that. Well, what does that mean, she's a very private person? And I learned that this particular mother didn't feel comfortable with involving others to support her. She didn't feel comfortable with developing a support network.
Mm.
And what occurred to me at this point was that very often when parents express a discomfort with that, practitioners, who particularly practitioners who are new to NVR, but not only, practitioners can have a tendency to back off from that whole issue or that whole area of work.
Mm.
It's almost like the practitioner says, okay, well, we'll talk about something else then. And it's as if we missed something very, very important here. And that was the background. I wonder, is that just an observation of mine that colleagues tend to just back off often when a parent expresses discomfort at the notion that, you know, it'll be important to involve people to support them?
I know I've experienced it also in supervision. And I'm wondering that the practitioner backs off for fear of pushing the parent too far. Let's imagine perhaps there's a parent who's experiencing really high levels of violence and very ongoing, very frequent, and the practitioner meets with the parent and is keen to help the parent develop the support network, and the practitioner feels the parent's got enough on her plate, or that pushing her may send her over the edge. Developing a support network takes a lot of time and thought and consideration for the parent. And perhaps that's one of the reasons why the practitioner backs off.
So that, I don't know. That's an interesting way of thinking on the part of the practitioner. Because one of the things you just said is the practitioner may worry about pushing the parent.
Mm.
And I think in NVR, if we're to be truly nonviolent in the widest sense, we would avoid pushing at all times.
Absolutely.
That we're not in the business of pushing, that we're in the business of opening new space, new possibilities.
Mm-hmm.
I think that can go for any NVR method.
Hmm.
You know, it's not, oh, I really think you need to do this. So that was the one thing. And the other thing is that there's a perception that developing a support network increases the parent's load rather than decreases the parent's load. If the practitioner feels, oh gosh, you know, building up a support network and she's already got so much on her hands.
Mm.
So I guess it would mean that the practitioner, her or himself or themselves, would need to have a really profound understanding and maybe a gut understanding of just how important, if not necessary, if not essential, real support is for parents. So that, to me, would be one prerequisite.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have a client who understands the theory and principles of creating support, understands that it's reducing isolation. Nevertheless, still feels reluctant to call in persons close for all the obvious reasons. I feel for shame, the shame of how the parent has got to this stage of their relationship with their child, for fear of judgment, for those reasons that the parent...
So you mean the colleague, the practitioner, feels uncomfortable with the parent's discomfort, with the parent's fear of feeling ashamed, the parent's fear of feeling judged, and so forth.
Mm.
And I guess what is necessary at that point is that the practitioner deals with that with the parent, gets into a conversation over that. So the other day, I was seeing parents I've just started working with. And at the end of the first session, I'd ask them to just think about who they may wish to approach in the first instance to become supporters to help them. And, you know, we talked about the fact that really you can't do this alone, you know, and the sort of somewhat cliched African proverb, you know, it takes a village to raise a child. But though it might be a cliche, it's true.
Mm-hmm.
It does take a village to raise a child at the best of times. How much more so when things are very difficult? But so anyway, so then I saw them again, the parents, and there were certain areas that we worked on in the first session that they really liked. They were thrilled. And then I said, so I'm just curious about, you know, your thoughts about who might be supporters. Interestingly, I thought afterwards, how did I put that? I didn't ask, have you thought about whether you would like to? I asked, have you thought about who? So I guess I'm presupposing the engagement of supporters.
Mm-hmm.
I think if, as NVR practitioners, we get into the whether, it becomes a yes or no.
Mm.
But if we really embody this understanding that you can't go it alone, that you need support, you know, then our mind doesn't even go into the whether. It goes into the how, into the who, into the what will you say to them, you know. So anyway, so these clients said, well, yeah, we are struggling with that. And they said, well, we haven't got anybody.
Mm.
And I found myself saying, uh-huh. Just wait. And then the dad, he said, well, my cousin, maybe he would be, oh no, sorry, before he said that, the dad said, oh, I've got some mates, but they say he's just naughty.
He's
naughty. So he said, oh, so your mates, when you talk to them about it, these mates, they minimize. And he said, yeah. I said, oh, what does that do to you when they minimize?
Mm-hmm.
And then the dad talked about how he feels when his mates minimize, that he doesn't feel understood, he doesn't feel taken seriously, and he feels worse than before. He wishes he hadn't said anything. So these are the things, I think, that we need to talk with our clients about, because these are reactions that happen. But because of these reactions, the families get isolated and they withdraw from that hurt. So, and it was at that point that I said, well, do you know, when the meeting takes place, it's my job, you know, as the practitioner, to facilitate that meeting and to help the people who you've invited to the meeting not to minimize. It's my job to ask you questions that would break the silence and help them realize how serious it is. And it's at that point that suddenly he said, oh yeah, well, maybe my cousin. And when he said, maybe my cousin, the mother said, well, maybe my aunt. And then I thought, does your aunt have a partner by any chance? And she said, yes, she has a partner. As a matter of fact, she has a wife. So I said, oh, do you think your aunt's wife might come into question as a supporter? And she said, oh, I haven't thought of that. And she said, oh, but I'm a bit reluctant. I said, oh, would they minimize? Oh, no. They wouldn't minimize. So I said, so what's your reluctance about? Where does it come from? And she said, well, they have, my aunt's wife has a very ill mother. She's got lots on her hands. You know, and I said, oh, okay, but we haven't spoken about yet what kind of commitment they make. And she said, oh, okay. So these are conversations that would not be had if we just went on to another topic.
Mm.
I said, the commitment of supporters can be anything from 10 minutes a week or even less, to several hours, depending on what they can commit to. And she said, oh, well, 10 minutes a week, anybody can do that. And I said, yeah, anybody can find 10 minutes.
We were discussing this in the training this week. We were delivering, my colleague Jackie and I were delivering training this week to a second cohort in Essex. And this came up, this conversation came up about the level of commitment in our discussions with the practitioners. And one of the participants said, well, you know, I don't know, if someone asked me to do a, you know, the night watch over this kid, because I was given a case example of a mother who asked a supporter to just man the phones that night so the mother could sleep.
Because
she'd had lots of broken nights and she needed rest. And she asked one of her supporters to say, if my daughter calls, would you answer the phone? And the supporter agreed. So when we brought it back to the group that we were training, one of the participants said, you know, I'm afraid I wouldn't be a supporter. I couldn't be a supporter. I haven't got that to give. And then that beautifully led us on to, there are many, many, many roles that a supporter can have for a family.
Yeah.
And I always love this one with a family I worked with a long time ago. It was a neighbour across the road who was invited to be a part of the support network, simply offered to put her bins out on a Thursday.
Uh-huh.
That was the support.
Yeah.
Because the mother kept forgetting her bins and therefore they weren't being emptied.
Yeah. And what relief if that is just one less thing to think about when you have so much on your plate already.
I was thinking about what you said, Peter, about the parent who feels that the supporter minimizes the behavior of the young person. And I was thinking about a family I've worked with where I think the parents' thoughts are that the support will minimize the behavior. So, for example, yeah, all kids do this. All kids kick off. Mm-hmm. It's part of parcel. That's what they do. That's part of their growing up. Sibling rivalry. They all argue and they all fight. And I think that perhaps could be the parents thinking that that's what the support will do, mm. as opposed to the actual voice of the supporter. Does that make sense? I don't know if I was clear.
I think that makes absolute sense. So, because those conversations haven't been had,
mm.
actually the parents can't know for mm. sure what the potential supporters' reactions will be. So you haven't had a conversation yet about the degree of commitment or what someone could commit to. You haven't had an actual conversation about how the supporter feels about the controlling behavior once they hear what it is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you then anticipate problematic reactions, which usually don't occur in the way mm-hmm. you anticipated them. They don't usually materialize.
Can I say something else about this word, support? I think that's why I liked it in the title, as just support. What? No support. When we have, in Partnership Projects, as you know, we have a lot of referrals for parents who are seeking practitioners to work with them on an individual basis. And part of our process is to have a consultation with the referring professional, and then we have a consultation with the parents. To ascertain the appropriateness and to talk more about what they would be embarking on. And one of my questions in a consultation is, we work with support and support networks, and part of that would be you acknowledging that part of recruiting support is a necessary part of MVR. What support do you have? And often parents would respond to that question, I have no support at all.
Yeah.
And what I've learned over the months is that I think what parents hear me saying is, who can have your child for you?
Mm-hmm.
Because when I then go on to talk about no support, how so? Can we talk a little bit more about that? This is just in consultation stage. I later find that there's an abundance of people that they could rely on or recruit or ask for lots of varying different things. But I feel that they hear another question.
Mm.
And I think our systems and our society see that question support as in, who can have your kid for you?
So are you saying that that understanding of support means taking over?
Yeah.
And that would have so many connected meanings that can be discouraging.
Mm.
Yeah, I mean, to begin with, the fact that I just don't have anybody who would take my kid for days or weeks on end. But also, if somebody has to take over, doesn't that mean I can't mm. I can't cope, I can't bring about change. I'm yeah. So that understanding of support almost implies that understanding of support implies that the parent is not capable.
Mm.
When And actually in NVR, we understand support in a very different way. It is support that helps the parent get in touch with their ability, with their competence, with their resources. So it's someone having the parent's back, not going in front of them and taking over the child.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It brings to mind, I'm working with a family who have reconnected with a person in their support network, and this person managed to spend 30 minutes with the child, allowing the parents 30 minutes to themselves, yeah. which was rewarding. 30 minutes, which is, on the grand scale of things, isn't a great deal of time, but that offered a wonderful opportunity for the parents to have time for themselves, to think, to eat, to sit in silence.
To have a cup of tea, to go for a walk.
Yeah.
Give each other a kiss.
Yeah, and to rebuild that sense of self-care, to slow things down, to breathe, to reflect. That was that half an hour felt a whole day, really, in some ways. It was such a beautiful offering and so greatly received.
It reminds me of when my kids were little, when I had toddler twins and another boy who's 3 years older than them, and those precious moments when they were just old enough that you could just spend 15 minutes thinking about something, or even just reading the newspaper. That self-care, but also I think you're talking about also the ability to reflect on things, to plan. Okay, so Jimmy pushed you against the wall yesterday and squared up to you. What are we going to do about it? Because we say in NVR that needs to be carefully planned rather than, the parents to show an immediate reaction. They need to, and the more carefully planned their response is, the better they carry it out. The more effective they are, the better they end up feeling about themselves. And someone just taking your child off your hands for 30 minutes can give you that opportunity, can't they?
Yeah. And I actually would welcome for that 30 minutes that you don't talk about your child.
I think it's a question of the need, isn't it? Some people might need to plan their reaction to the child pushing the parent against the wall. Some people may just feel the need to sit together with a cup of tea and look out at the glorious sunshine.
Absolutely.
Whatever's
chosen is right.
Yeah. Do you know there's something else that's come to my mind as we've been talking? And I mean, a lot of families we work with, the parents have pulled away from others because, they've felt ashamed of their kids' behavior, or because they've been so preoccupied dealing with their child, or because people have responded negatively when the child has misbehaved. And then they don't just necessarily pull away from those people whose responses were not so helpful. They tend to pull away, and that's human, that's what we do. They tend to really pull away more and more from lots of people, including those people who would be potentially helpful, or people whom you simply need as friends. Become isolated. And what you were talking about earlier, that they sort of anticipate negative reactions. That tendency to anticipate negative reactions doesn't that also grow the more isolated you become?
For sure.
So in a sense, your anticipation, your anxious anticipation of negative reactions is in part a response or a result of the child's problematic behavior. And by engaging other people, you start taking back what you lost.
It's that, reclaiming back your life.
Reclaiming
that position you need to have.
I think that's really, really important. And it strikes me that often when parents then engage supporters, they tend to make an interesting discovery, and that is that the supporters feel they've been given something. You know, the supporters feel gratified that the parents have shown them such trust. Or someone said, my supporters have felt honored. They've told me they've felt honored that they've been asked to help. And she said, isn't that ironic, you know, that I've given them something when they've given us so much?
I recall a Senko at a school, after a school meeting, a school supporters meeting, and the Senko, after we began sharing what the parent needed from the school, the Senko touched his heart and he said, just that, I feel absolutely honoured that you've chosen me as part of your support team in the school. I feel privileged. And I got a bit of goosebump myself. I felt, wow, that's such a lovely thing to say. So genuine and humble.
Yeah.
Really putting the mother at ease. She hadn't expected that.
Yeah. Perhaps this is a good point to wrap up.
Yeah. Could talk about support all the time, I think, bringing this topic to our discussion today for the podcast. I'm not sure what our listeners get out of this, but I think I could talk for a really long time about support and the importance of enabling parents to explore how their support network can look and feel, that it's unique. At the same time, it isn't about making a parent develop a support network, but it is one of the necessary things in MVR that we strongly encourage to happen, to take place, that support is crucial for the parents' reduction of isolation and loneliness.
And I would like to offer, instead of a summary, because I don't think I could add anything to your summary, I'd like to offer a belief that I have. It's my belief that the quality of that support that families get is the most important factor in determining a good outcome.
I agree. Beautifully put. Okay. Thank you very much for listening. And we aim to get another podcast out in a fortnight. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.